Today's podcast is brought to you by Howie's new book, Paperboy. To order today, go to HowieCarshow.com and click on store.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
We got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice, Grace Curley.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald and the Spectator.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
Here's the millennial with the mic, Grace Curley.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. Let's go to Trump right now. He's live outside the courthouse. Oh, he just wrapped up. I just said to Jared, I go, I don't know what kind of cameras they're using outside the courthouse. There's something, am I crazy, or is there something different than the typical cameras we see outside?
No, it seems
so
like
clear.
They realized this was going to be going on, so they've like permanently set up a nice HD, super clear camera rather than just the regular normal news cameras they had when it was just, you know, here and there he'd show up and step out. But now they're camped out for the rest of this trial so they can plant the big equipment.
I will say, Jared, the color of the camera,
unless he's in front of some type of green screen and he's not actually in court, we don't know.
How sometimes Trump, and I'm not being mean here, I'm just remarking on it. Sometimes he can look very orange if they get him in the wrong light, and then other times he doesn't look orange at all. They've got the perfect level here. Well, what's the camera speak for this? They've got the perfect
balance.
Perfect balance.
Yeah, it's like white balance.
It's a white balance thing.
This is probably like movie HD quality camera rather than just like an on-the-shoulder news rig.
I mean, every day for him now, this is a campaign speech he gets to give outside the courthouse. Again, who thought that this split screen of Trump looking like a martyr who's making a comeback versus Biden wandering in the woods or, you know, standing in front of a step and repeat that says, move, go, move, or Joe's on the run, like all these stupid phrases. Who thought that this was going to make Joe look good? Like, oh, let's make Trump the comeback kid again.
Trump probably bought the cameras for all the news outlets. These cameras make me look good. Use these.
It would have been a good investment.
I don't know. He was held up a stack of what looked like court documents, and he was kind of rifling through and talking about them. So
he loves a prop. We know. He loves a prop.
I just saw this. I don't know if it happened yesterday or not when I wasn't here, but I guess now the Manhattan DA, like the office, they don't want Trump to go to jail for breaking the gag order. They've asked the judge just to fine him instead of imprisoning
him. Oh, that's mighty
him.
Big of them, isn't it? You know what? The other part of this that I think is a problem is that people aren't. We've kind of crossed the Rubicon when it comes to making Trump into a bad husband or a bad. Here's what I mean. People already have made peace with that in one way or another. People understand that he might not have been completely faithful to Melania, that he might not be a great husband. People understand that he's made mistakes were made. People get all that. They just don't care. So people aren't really like hanging on to every word of this trial. They know what they know. And we do understand this. We understand the Stormy Daniels of it all. We understand the hush money of it all. People just really don't care. I would guess. I don't think there's people out there waiting with bated breath on what the former editor of the National Enquirer is going to say about Donald Trump. But what people are paying attention to is the split screen. We go back to it. People are paying attention to why are they going so hard after someone who's trying to run for president? Why are they so hell-bent on not letting us hear from this guy, vote for this guy, have this guy on our ballot? And I do think that you get a little bit of one of my favorite things to reference, the Barbra Streisand effect. The more people tell you, you can't see this, you can't see him, you shouldn't vote for him, you shouldn't have access to him, the more people go, and I'm talking about moderate people here, the more those people say to themselves, can he really be that bad? What's he talking about that's so outrageous? And then you dig in a little bit. He's outside the courthouse. He's talking about illegal immigration. He's talking about inflation. He's at a bodega talking about how backwards everything is with crime in New York City. He's talking about issues that anyone who has half a brain would go, that's not that crazy. That's not that out there. This is what's so bad.
And that's another brilliant part of this that plays for Trump is, you know, people who just hate Trump are going to hate Trump. They're never going to move off that. The people call up on the show, they're just never going to move off that.
Yeah, it's uncurable.
Yeah, it is. But there are certain people out there who have read, this is the worst guy in the history of time. He's the baby of Nixon and Hitler. Like, I mean, it's the worst thing ever. And this is why he's terrible. And they're watching this and they're like, okay, so this is something that's not even a crime?
Right.
That there's no evidence for. And even if it were a crime, it's the most misdemeanory of misdemeanory accounting mistakes or something. Like,
well, they're trying to trump up a misdemeanor. In most cases, they're trying to make sure that people don't get charged with misdemeanors. Like if you rob a bank, if you do anything that actually should get trumped up, they try to trump it down. And this is the opposite. By the way, it's incurable, not uncurable. So I don't want to get grief for that. That was a slip of the tongue. I want to talk about Governor Moore Healey for a second here. We haven't talked local in a while. Governor Moore Healey says there's no plan to fire transportation secretary after border toll scandal.
Of course there isn't.
Your job is safe here in Massachusetts. This is a sanctuary city for morons. If you want to be a moron, if you want to insult the voters, if you want to do a bad job at anything, Massachusetts is the place for you. This is a sanctuary city for anyone who wants to be a hack. You will be protected. So let me give you all a little background if you missed it. If you want to hear more about it, you should go back to last week, how he did a lot on his show. Governor Moore Healey doubled down on her support for Transportation Secretary Monica Tibbetts-Nutt, telling the Herald Tuesday that she has no plan to fire Tibbetts-Nutt following an uproar over border toll comments the secretary made earlier this month. So Tibbetts-Nutt, for people who haven't been following this, said a task force created to brainstorm recommendations for a sustainable transportation finance plan could discuss tolling drivers at the state border. And Healey has now told WBUR that those views do not represent the administration. In a self-described unfiltered address, those are my favorite kind. I love an unfiltered address. Tibbetts-Nutt, and by the way, this was at the Walk Massachusetts event. So it was a recorded speech she delivered. She criticized owners of pickup trucks and declared she would not make it that long in state government. She underestimated the state government in Massachusetts. You'll make it plenty far here, Monica Tibbetts-Nutt. Fear not. And she said she would 100% use public conversations and statements about policy as a weapon. It's not how we do things. This is Maura Healey. She said, it's not how we do things. It's not how we operate. And we've moved on from that. She also said it was a very poor choice of words. That's becoming more of a...
The old different experience with words.
Yeah, that everyone's misspeaking all the time. Well, not everyone. It depends on what side of the political aisle you're on. But if you make any mistakes on the correct side of the political aisle, it can be attributed to, I misspoke.
As you can see, I didn't get my English lessons.
That was a mistake. It's very obvious that what I meant to say deep inside my soul was something quite different. Actually, what I feel inside my heart is the exact opposite of what came out of my mouth. And it happens all the time for people on the left. So I just wanted to give everybody that update that if you were worried about the transportation secretary, Monica Tibbetts-Nutt, losing her job, Maura Healey is here to tell you that you can take a sigh of relief. She has no plans to fire her. She has no plans to fire Tibbetts-Nutt. Now, before I go to break here, we are going to talk to Toby Leary when we come back. So get on the line now. It's 844-500-4242. I got to mention one thing. Have you been seeing a lot of headlines, like an odd amount of headlines about Bon Jovi as of late?
I haven't, no.
You don't go on the Daily Mail enough. On the Daily Mail and the New York Post, it seems like every day I go on there, there's a new story about Bon Jovi. Bon Jovi says he wasn't a saint during his marriage. Bon Jovi says this and that. And it's like, who's asking for all this Bon Jovi information? So, Jared, so what I did was I went to look and I said, he must be coming out with a book. Otherwise, why is he going around telling us about his marriage? I don't think anyone asked. But I don't see a book in the future.
Yeah, is he going on tour again? I don't...
Everywhere I turn.
He's friends with Bill Belichick. Is this Bob Kraft targeting him?
Yeah, is this... What is the Bon Jovi of it all? You know what Howie calls him? Bon Jovi. I just don't get it. And I also don't understand, like... The only reason I can understand why people go and air their dirty laundry, which people do all the time now, is if you're selling a book and you're trying to, you know, you would do it too for a check. Like, you're trying to make that coin. But just to go on, if you're a married man and go on and tell a radio host or, you know, a TV interview, oh, I wasn't always a saint in my marriage. That's none of my business. That's none of my business. I don't need, Grace Curley does not need to know about Bon Jovi's marital experience. Thank you very much. We all should know less about each other. That's the hot take of this Tuesday. We'll be right back with Toby Leary, 844-500-4242. We also have an update for you on what they're calling the tent city in the Windy City, this $70 million migrant shelter that has caused a tremendous amount of backlash from Chicago residents who don't feel as though illegal immigrants should be getting all of this special treatment when the residents in Chicago are getting diddly squat. And they're making that clear to Brandon Johnson. I don't think he really cares all that much, to be honest. 844-500-4242. We'll be right back. Vote in the poll question. We'll do that when we return. Just vote at GraceCurlyShow.com. And don't go anywhere.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. This is the Grace Curley Show.
.207 texted in. Bon Jovi and Valerie Bertinelli are always in the Daily Mail. Yeah, here are the headlines. It's not just the Daily Mail. It says John Bon Jovi on the secret to marriage. I've never lied about being a saint. John Bon Jovi, this is in page 6, admits he hasn't been a saint in 34-year marriage to high school sweetheart. If I'm his wife, I'm like, will you stop it? Like, it's not enough that you weren't a saint. We have to tell page 6 about it? And then it says, John Bon Jovi corrects record on Richie Sambora leaving the band. He chose not to come back. Why are we drudging up this ancient history? Is there, like, Jared...
Was anybody asking for this?
I really cannot imagine that people were. Hey, I wanted to mention one thing here before we bring on Toby Leary and before we do the poll question. Biden's comments yesterday have sparked a lot of outrage for good reason. I mean, he sparks outrage everywhere he goes, and then that's his one advantage, is that there's always another gaffe to pay attention to, so you forget about the last one. But I think for Jewish people in this country especially, this was pretty jarring. He made a comment about how, yes, he denounces the anti-Semitism at these universities and colleges, but he also denounces people who don't understand the Palestinians. And a lot of people, Alan Dershowitz, David Harsanyi, have been very critical in saying he's trying to create a moral equivalence between people who are pro-Israel and these Hamas-loving, death-to-America protesters out there in order to gain the death-to-America vote. And the reason I bring this up is because I do want to play one other cut that I would be really remiss if I didn't get to. Again, Jared, this is Coleman Hughes. He explains why creating that false moral equivalence is so dangerous and why we do have to be pretty decisive about standing with what is right. This is cut 9.
If you ask the question, what is unique about this war? What is different about this war than all other wars? It's not the civilian death toll. The ratio of combatants to civilians is, I think it's better than the American armies was when we got ISIS out of Mosul. That was like 10,000 civilians dead to kill 4,000 ISIS. This is 19,000 civilians dead to kill 13,000. What's unique about this war, unlike every other war that I could think of, is you have an army in Hamas that has perfected the art of embedding itself and meshing itself with civilians so that you cannot hit them without hitting the people around them. Other armies have done this, but none have perfected it to the extent that Hamas has. And yes, I agree with all of the absolute tragedy and suffering of the Palestinian people, but what creates that is the way Hamas fights. And either we can say one of two things. We can either say Israel doesn't have a clean shot and they have to let Hamas get away with it because it's too much to bear. But then we are essentially creating a situation where terrorists have found the perfect solution, which is that you can cross the border, go house to house slaughtering your enemies, and then hide behind your own people and they can do nothing about it. It's a perfect strategy. Can we live in a world where we allow that to be an acceptable strategy? I don't think so. And it's very ugly to watch. It's heartbreaking, and I completely understand why people don't think the way I think when they see the videos. I completely get it. But I don't think we can actually live in a world where that's allowed to be a strategy.
Yeah, and just to go along with that, in Tablet, there's this great piece, to be on everyone's side is to be on no one's, and how this constant, you know, we choose the side of humanity, we choose the side of humanity. This writer says, it's too flat to honor the dignity of the differences that set us apart. And then she writes, not me, I choose the side of the Jews. As those of us who had actually fought in wars know all too well, no normal human being would ever call for war to last longer than it should or be deadlier than it must. But shirking from doing what must be done to protect and defend Jewish security isn't mercy, compassion, or civility. It's merely an invitation for more carnage, which I think is along the same lines of is what Coleman Hughes was trying to explain to Joe Rogan. 844-500-4242. Get on the lines now for Toby Leary. Today's poll question is brought to you by J.J. Manning Auctioneers. Whether residential, commercial, or land, J.J. Manning can get your property sold now. To learn more, contact Charlie Gill at 800-521-0111 or go to jjmanning.com. With over 16,000 sales and satisfied clients, you can be the next one. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at gracecurlyshow.com, is do you think universities will move graduations to Zoom because of the peaceful protests?
I'm already seeing some rumblings of this. You know, they're not saying it outright, but they are telling some students at these schools to learn via Zoom for right now, temporarily, because there's so much violence out there if you're a Jewish student. And as I mentioned, it says USC said it also wouldn't have outside speakers and honorees at its May 10th commencement ceremony, which draws 65,000 people to campus. USC said on Friday that it will provide more updates this week. The University of Michigan is setting up designated areas for protests outside venues at many of its ceremonies, because a lot of these schools have multiple graduations. I don't think that's going to deter protesters. And I think a lot of these schools are going to say, listen, we don't have the security. We can't handle this. You know, we'll announce your name via Zoom and that's it. We'll call it a day. So, yeah, I do think they'll do it.
30% think that universities will move graduations to Zoom. 48% say maybe a handful. 22% say no.
I will mention here that on Twitter, people are replying to me and saying, you should ask the question, will these universities fire professors who are joining in? Because that's another thing, too. At NYU, professors...
That's a 99-to-1.
I know. I said that would be a stupid question. We all know these professors. If anything, they're going to get tenure if they haven't already. They're joining arm in arm with the anti-Israel protesters at NYU to block the cafeteria. They're not getting fired. This is solidifying their place on the NYU staff for the rest of time. It's like what Maura Healey said. We're not going to fire anybody for being incompetent or for misspeaking. God forbid. All right, so we've got Toby Leary on the lines. People are already stacking up to talk to him. Get on the lines now. It's 844-500-4242. We will take all your calls for Toby Leary from Cape Gunworks, whether it's about the Second Amendment, if it's about licensing, if it's about a type or style of gun. We have all of your answers. I don't have them, but I know Toby does. So wait on the lines. Cape Gunworks, Toby Leary joins us and answers all your questions after the break.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
We Without further ado, we are joined by Toby Leary from Cape Gunworks in Hyannis. He's here to answer all of your questions. And Toby, I have some questions of my own, but first, let's go to the callers. The number is 844-500-4242. Eddie, you're first up today with Toby. Go ahead, Eddie.
Hi, Toby. I follow you on Telegram.
Oh, great. Thank you, Eddie. I appreciate that.
Yes, I wanted to know, do you believe that it is fair, correct, legal, moral, and constitutional for parents to be held responsible for their mass shooting children who shoot up schools and such?
Yeah, we talked about this a couple weeks ago when it first came down. I assume you mean the Crumbly case in Michigan, where the parents were sentenced to manslaughter for involuntary manslaughter, I think. But let's put it this way. I think there's an unequal application of the law. And this is done, I think, for political reasons to shed further, cast the Second Amendment in a negative light in the media. And I think the one thing that we didn't talk about last time is, if you're going to universally apply this across the board, then you need to hold parents whose gangbanger kids who are shooting up, communities in Chicago and Detroit to the same standard. Are you going to lock those parents up for their underage children who participate in gang violence? I know the answer to that question, but the fact remains that there's an unequal application of this, I believe. However, I do think that the parents bore some of the responsibility in this case. So I think that the fact that they gave the kid the gun and it wasn't in a secure location and he had access to it, and the fact that the school called him on the day of the shooting and said, like, your kid's, freaking out, you need to come pick him up. And they said, we can't come get him because we're too busy working. Like, if my school called me and said, come pick up your kid, I wouldn't argue with them and say I'm at work. I'd get in a car and drive and pick up my kid. But instead, they told the school to deal with it, and it turns out he had a gun and he ended up shooting people. So I do think there's some sort of responsibility on the side of the parents, whether it's 15 years in jail, I don't know. I've said originally my knee-jerk reaction was, we don't hold parents to the same responsibility in any other situation in life. So why are we doing it in this one? And I still feel this one was politically motivated, but it's a terrible situation. I think the parents bear some responsibility. I don't know that they should do 10 or 15 years in jail, but I do think they should be charged with something there. But again, I'm not trying to defend their behavior in this case. So it's an interesting case, Eddie. I probably should know more about it than I do, but we don't apply the law across the board equally in all situations like this.
Yeah, but Toby, I think what you just said really does hit the nail on the head if you zoom out, because I was talking about it with Emma at one point behind the scenes, and I said, well, yeah, but they were bad parents, and they did let this weapon get in the hands of their son. And Emma said to me, well, that's a different charge, though. That's how you handle your weapons, right? And what laws are on the books for handling weapons. That's not manslaughter. Like, that's the issue here, is that if you start using this as the precedent, then it's not going to be applied equally, as opposed to what laws do we have on the books and then applying those. If you want to write new laws, that's a whole different story.
Right. Yeah, and I agree with you there, and think that, again, like, the Columbine parents who were so detached from their children's lives that they didn't know their kids were in this dark place, and, had been collecting guns illegally and buying them and going and shooting them. And in fact, they only need to walk into the room and participate in the child's life once in a while, and they would have been made a whole lot, been able to dial in on what the kid is going through. But instead, they really were detached from the situation. And I do agree there's a parenting problem to a certain extent in some cases like this, and that is a problem that it breaks my heart, being a father of three kids, thinking about how other parents could be so detached from their children's lives that they'd be in a position to carry something like this out without them knowing or whatever. And then the whole back and forth between the two parents when they realize the gun is missing and that the kid probably has it at school, and then trying to cover their tracks for that, I think is, you know, puts them in some sort of culpability. But where, I don't know, maybe the court got it right. I don't know. It's a complicated question, but I think you need to apply the law equally across the board.
Yeah, well said. Let's go to David. You're up next with Toby Leary. Go ahead, David.
Hey, you know, Toby, you're right. It is a complicated issue, and everything seems to get a little bit diluted. But the Second Amendment and guns kind of keeps this country free. You know what I mean? The reason the government can't come and, you know, take us all over is the fact that we can protect ourselves. We're an armed citizen. You know what I mean? Do you have any fear that, I mean, they can't take the guns away? But what's your long-range look at this? I mean, because, you know, what I believe is that the reason why the government can't come in and take us all over is because, you know, we're armed. You know what I mean? Is that part of your thought process or you know, the long term?
100%.
Do you believe that we're safe from the government?
Yeah, David, I agree with you 100%. I think the government has been held in check to a certain extent from really going all the way to total tyranny because the fact that we are armed. And the sad thing is the media has really picked up the reins for the government and has carried their water and basically towed the line and you know, leads every evening news with a negative outcome with a firearm, all to really move the goalposts or move the chains down the field toward that goal of total disarmament. And they will start, it's a long game they're willing to play, and that's by a thousand cuts. But it's all about, you know, just trying to get the guns incrementally taken away. And I think that is a horrible position for government to take up. And the truth of the matter is that's where we're at in this day and age. And you'll see right now, I made a video that says gun control is spreading like a disease throughout our country. We see it in many other states that it never was an issue. And I hate to say it, but that's really the way it's spreading. So every time we defeat a case, four more pop up. And that's really the sad state of affairs. And I think the end goal is the same. Government has plans for you that you wouldn't be happy with and be okay with. And I think the Constitution gets in the way of what ultimately these people who have nefarious intent for us is. And maybe that's, you know, just being able to lock us down in our homes whenever they want. I don't know. But the bottom line is the same thing happened in 1776 or 1775 when they marched on Concord and Lexington. And we just celebrated that holiday on Friday, Patriots Day, the official holiday on Monday. But that was the anniversary of the shot heard around the world, which was the birth of the freest and best country on earth. So take note when government wants to restrict your lawful constitutional right to keep and bear arms, because that's where they're at right now. And it's an unfortunate state of affairs in American history.
Yeah, Toby, I did want to ask you about one more story before we let you go, and that involves this man, Dexter Taylor. So I'm reading now from Red State. It says, New York City man convicted over gunsmithing hobby after judge says Second Amendment doesn't exist in this courtroom. I thought when I read the headline from Red State, it was an exaggeration, but then the actual quote here. So this man, Dexter Taylor, he has the hobby where he likes to gunsmith. He talked about it. He said in an interview that he found out you can legally buy a receiver and you can machine that receiver to completion. He thought it was the coolest thing ever. He decided to keep doing it, creating, I think it was some AR-style rifles, the 8 or 9 Glock pistols that he built. And so now he's involved now in this case that could become a landmark Second Amendment case, depending on how it goes. And so while his defense was making their argument, the judge kept interrupting And she admonished the defense to refrain from mentioning the Second Amendment during the trial. You would think he's being arrested for gunsmithing, and that's what the case is about. You think you could be able to bring up the Second Amendment. Here's the quote. Do not bring the Second Amendment into this courtroom. It doesn't exist here, so you can't argue Second Amendment. This is New York. What's your response to that, Toby?
It's unbelievable, Grace, that that could ever be uttered from a courtroom in America and that judge not immediately be impeached, because the Constitution is the law of the land. It supersedes any state law. It supersedes, any regulation that some city or municipality could pass. Dexter Taylor is, I think, going to serve us well in the future. For, you know, unfortunately, he's going through a lot of pain as he sits on Rikers Island as we speak, for doing exactly what the colonists did when King George III went to take the guns and powder away from the colonists in Concord and Lexington. The home-built firearms, if you're not a prohibited person, it's in our nation's history and tradition to do that. There's never been laws against it. You can lawfully and legally do it to this day. And ironically enough, yesterday, Grace, this is breaking news, the Supreme Court agreed to hear the Vanderstock v. Garland case, which is all about home-built firearms. And does the ATF have the power to change the law, really, in the enforcement of unfinished frames and receivers and redefine it different than the 1968 Gun Control Act when Congress spoke about what a frame and receiver was in 1968. And so they are now trying to say, oh, anything that's going to ultimately become a firearm is an unfinished frame or receiver, and you got to have all kinds of requirements on it, serialization, et cetera. And if you live in a state like New York, they've already banned it, and so you can't build any homemade firearms, which is absolutely ridiculous and totally unconstitutional. It's antithetical to how this nation was founded and what it was founded upon. And the fact that the Supreme Court took this case yesterday, I don't know if it's an accident. They might have seen this Taylor case out of New York City and said, we got to act. And Merrick Garland was the one who actually sought certiorari in this case. So this is big. This is the fourth kind of Second Amendment related case that is been agreed to by the Supreme Court, and we're going to see what they rule on it. It's probably going to take a little while, but I hope this guy Taylor can sue the state of New York for millions of dollars in damages for every day he stayed got held behind bars. He was not a prohibited person, and seemed like a really good guy that took up gunsmithing as a hobby, and now he's sitting behind bars on Rikers Island. That's what your government wants to do to you. If I might make one more quick point, I know we got to go, but
no, go ahead.
Just about every time government has got involved on a Second Amendment basis like this, it has ended really bad. Look at Waco. That was one. A lot of people don't realize that they suspected David Koresh of possessing a machine gun. That's what started that whole rage. Look at Ruby Ridge when they came down on Randy Weaver and his wife, shot his wife in the face and shot his kid in the back because he had sawn off a barrel of a shotgun a half an inch less than the legal limit, a total victimless crime in the middle of the woods that the feds put him up to do. It's total entrapment. And here's another case where they pass this arbitrary law and then they convict a man who had no prior crimes or prior criminal record. Now he's sitting behind bars. It is unbelievable. And our government should be absolutely ashamed of themselves for putting good people behind bars for a complete victimless crime, especially when crime runs rampant in our streets throughout the country and they do nothing about it and look the other way.
Yeah, absolutely, Toby. I wish we had more time, but I want you to let people know where they can follow you, where they can find you, and where they can visit you at Cape Gunworks.
Yeah, thanks, Grace. We'll be doing a lot of talk on this case, both of these cases, tomorrow on Rapid Fire between 4 and 6. You can follow along at Rapid Fire Radio when we go live. Just type in your email. You'll be alerted whenever we go live. And please like and subscribe to all the social media content out there at Cape Gunworks and at Rapid Fire Radio on all of the big tech and some of the alt tech platforms out there. And always you can come down to Cape Gunworks. We'd love to have you. And we'll show you around, shoot on our range, take a class, And I appreciate you having me on, Grace. We'll see you next week.
Absolutely. Thank you, Toby. And we'll be right back with Howie Carr. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
This is a little bit kind of prior to it becoming such a, kind of sensationalized issue, in my opinion. But at the end of the day, I think that's the reason why I feel like we're having such a difficult conversation here, and why we're talking around circles, in circles, is because what we are trying to implement in this law is not actually resolving a problem that exists. What it is doing is it is scaring people who are in vulnerable communities and creating, in my opinion, a much more precarious situation for the public safety of all of the members of our community, because we are being kind of ginned up to be concerned about one or two mass murders. And so
just one or two mass murders. That was Representative from New Hampshire, Jody Newell, and she's arguing against an anti-sanctuary city bill. So she's pro-sanctuary, and she thinks this is being sensationalized. Howie, based off the audio, she also finds it rather amusing that people are being murdered by illegal aliens.
Yeah, how about the fact that the guy from Brazil was arrested in Rye, New Hampshire? He was convicted of 11 murders. Is that just an anecdote, as Deval Patrick used to say?
Yeah, it's sensationalized, and you're just fear-mongering. You know, when Caroline Levitt filled in for me, Howie, when I was on maternity leave, she used to talk about New Hampshire and how much of an issue. I mean, really across the board now, and every state's a border state, as you know. But New Hampshire especially, people there are very upset about how this is affecting their communities. I don't know if they'd appreciate that kind of dismissive tone from Jody Newell.
Well, you know, I'm sure she lives in one of the upscale suburbs, you know, and they're just as insulated and cocooned from reality as Dover or Weston or one of those places.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Howie, what do you got planned for today?
We got all kinds of stuff. We're going to talk. We have a guy coming in from Media Research Center. It really kind of bugs me that they're concentrating on the Trump trial when all these riots are going on college campuses. I think that's what people are concerned about, or are talking more about. And we're also going to check in with Jay Valentine. He's the guy who's trying to prevent the Democrats from stealing the election in 2024. We're going to ask him for an update. We like to get an update from every month or 6 weeks or so to see how he's doing. He's doing well in the states, but I'm not sure how well he's doing at a national level. You know, getting Republicans convinced that there's a way to deal with this rampant fraud.
Yeah, and to your first point, Howie, I would agree. I think that this kind of, Turley described it as a split screen, seeing them, the left, drumming up these stories about, on the National Enquirer, former editor is going to talk about Trump's hush money, when you have the world is on fire, and this country especially is going down in flames. Seems like we could have bigger issues in front of us. Howie Carr is coming up next. He's got a great show planned. I will see you all tomorrow. Ta-ta for now.